A Far Cry from Kensington by Muriel Spark. Read by Juliet Stevenson. So great was the noise during the day that I used to lie awake at night listening to the silence. Eventually, I fell asleep contented, filled with soundlessness. But while I was awake, I enjoyed the experience of darkness, thought, memory, sweet anticipations. I heard the silence. It was in those days of the early 50s of this century that I formed the habit of insomnia. Insomnia is not bad in itself. You can lie awake at night and think. The quality of insomnia depends entirely on what you decide to think of. Can you decide to think? Yes, you can. You can put your mind to anything most of the time. You can sit peacefully in front of a blank television set, just watching nothing, and sooner or later you can make your own program much better than the mass product. It's fun. You should try it. You can put anyone you like on the screen, alone or in company, saying and doing what you want them to do, with yourself in the middle, if you prefer it that way. At night, I lay awake looking at the darkness, listening to the silence, prefiguring the future, picking out of the past the scraps I'd overlooked, those rejected events which now came to the foreground, large and important, so that the weight of destiny no longer bore on the current problems of my life, whatever they were at the time. For who lives without problems every day? Why waste the nights on them? Often, it is a far cry from Kensington and the early 1950s, this scene of my night watch. But even now, when I return to London, to Kensington, and have paid the taxi and been greeted by the people waiting there, and have telephoned the friends and opened the mail, that night I find again my hours of sweet insomnia, and know that it is a far cry from that Kensington of the past, that old Brompton Road, that Brompton Road, that Brompton Oratory. A far cry. My thoughts of the night dwell often on those past thoughts of the night, in the same way that my daily life at the time has a certain bearing on what I do now. It was 1954. I was living in furnished rooms in a tall house in South Kensington. I was startled some years ago by a friend's referring to that rooming house near South Kensington Underground you used to stay in. Millie, the owner, would have denied indignantly that it was a rooming house, but I suppose that is what it was. Millie was 60 years of age, a widow. She is now well over 90 and still very much Millie. The house was semi-detached, and on the detached side was separated from its neighbour by no more than 3 feet. There were 18 houses on each side of the street of identical pattern. The wrought iron front gates led up a short path, with a patch of gravel and flower beds on either side and lined with speckled laurel bushes, to a front door which bore 2 panes of patterned glass. All Millie Sanders's tenants had a key to the front door, which led into a small entrance hall. Millie herself occupied the ground floor. On the right, as you came in, was a hall stand with a mirror, some coat pegs and a place for umbrellas. On one of its flat surfaces stood the telephone. On the left was Millie's best room, with a bow window used only for visitors. Ahead was the staircase leading to the tenants' landings, and to the left of the staircase, a short passage leading to Millie's sitting room, kitchen, bedroom, and its adjoining conservatory and her back garden, which was good and sizable for a London house. These streets had been built for merchant families of the past century.